The following is an encore presentation of Everything Everywhere Daily. Today in Western Europe, there is a line that divides speakers of Germanic languages and speakers of Romance languages. While that line has shifted over time, its existence can be traced back to a battle that took place over 2,000 years ago. That battle rocked the Roman Empire to its core and finally set limits for how big the empire could grow. Learn more about the Battle of Teutoburg Forest and how its impact can still be seen today on this episode of Everything Everywhere Daily. This episode is sponsored by Harry's Razors. I want to tell you a quick story. Several years ago, I was a podcast listener just like you, and I was listening to one of my favorite history podcasts. One of the ads on the show was for a company called Harry's Razors. I was extremely dissatisfied with the razors I was using at the time, so I figured I'd give these Harry's Razors a try. And it was a great decision, and I have been a customer of Harry's Razors ever since. I use Harry's Razors at home, and I've taken them with me on trips around the world. Not only does Harry's Razors provide a smooth shave, but they do so at a much lower price than their competitors, which, if you've checked out the price of razor blades lately at the store, that is not something to sneeze at. Don't settle for the status quo. You can blaze your own trail with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/everything. That's harrys.com/everything for a $3 trial set. This episode is sponsored by newspapers.com, your passport to untold stories and hidden histories. As the largest online newspaper archive, newspapers.com offers an incredible journey through time, with papers dating back to 1690. Imagine exploring the news, events, and everyday moments that shape the history of the world around us. Newspapers.com puts over 900 million pages at your fingertips, offering a front row seat to the past. With papers from the United States, United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, and beyond, Newspapers.com lets you walk the streets of history, whether it's London during the Blitz, New York during Prohibition, or Sydney during the construction of the Harbor Bridge. For listeners of today's episode, Newspapers.com is extending a special offer. Use the code EVERYTHINGEVERYWHERE and enjoy a 20% discount on a subscription. That's Everything Everywhere at newspapers.com. It's the perfect way to unlock the world of history. One of the common themes that keeps popping up in various episodes of the show is how the modern world is still influenced by things that happened in the distant past. It's only through the lens of time that we can figure out what events were big and what events were both big and significant. A good example would be the Battle of Cannae that I previously did an episode on. Hannibal and the Carthaginians wiped out an enormous Roman army in a battle that caused Rome to suffer an existential crisis. In the big scheme of things, however, even though that battle is still studied by military commanders today, it did not end up deciding the war. It was big, but it wasn't significant. The Battle of Teutoburg Forest is another very important moment in Roman history. As with the Battle of Cannae, it was a big moment. But unlike Cannae, it also had a lasting impact. To understand how the Battle of Teutoburg Forest came about, we first have to understand how Rome got to this point. By the time Augustus became the first emperor, Rome controlled everything around the Mediterranean, save for parts of North Africa around modern-day Algeria and Morocco. In Europe, they controlled almost all the Iberian Peninsula, save for the north, all of Gaul and Greece. There were, and forever would be, two areas that Rome couldn't conquer: Parthia in the east, and Germany in the north. While conquering Parthia was a Roman dream, it was far away. Germany was not far from Rome, and they shared a very long border with it. Germany was not a unified country. It was just a collection of tribes that more often than not quarreled with each other. The Romans had been fighting with the Germans for about a century, but things really picked up at about the year 16 BC. The de facto border between the Roman Empire and the German lands was the Rhine River. Most of the Roman campaigns during this period were in what is today Western Germany, east of the Rhine. The Romans were able to control the tribes near the border. They would tax them, and they would hold the children of tribal leaders as hostages. And by hostage, this means that they were taken to Rome, raised by a Roman family, and given a Roman education. And this is where the first character enters the story, a German by the name of Arminius, or as he's known in German, Hermann. Yes, his name is Hermann the German. Arminius was the son of Sigimerus, who was the chief of the Cherusi tribe. His father had to give him up as a tribute to Rome, and Arminius was sent to Rome to be raised. From all external appearances, Arminius was an excellent Roman. He learned Latin, became a Roman citizen, received a military education, joined the army, and was named an equis, which was the Roman equivalent of being a knight. He knew the Roman military system inside and out, but he never forgot that he was, in fact, German. Nor did the Romans forget this fact. In the year 4, he was given command of a unit made up of his fellow Cherusi tribesmen that fought in the Balkans. In the year 7, he was sent to Germany to serve under the commander and governor for the region, Publius Quintilius Varus. Varus had a pretty accomplished career up to this point. He had been the governor of both Africa and Syria. He gained notoriety for ruthlessly quashing a rebellion in Judea, where he famously crucified 2,000 Jewish rebels. When the future emperor Tiberius declared the lands to the east of the Rhine pacified, Augustus declared it the new Roman province of Germania. And in the year 7, Augustus appointed Varus the first governor of Germania. Just as Varus was taking over in Germania, and Arminius was sent to serve under him, 8 legions were sent from Germania down to the Balkans, where it was felt they were more needed, suppressing what was known as the Great Illyrian Revolt. In fact, about half of all the Roman legions in the world were sent to Illyria. This left Varus with just 3 legions in Germania, the 17th, the 18th, and the 19th, which consisted of a total of around 15,000 to 20,000 men. Arminius's job under Varus was to serve as a representative to the German tribes. Because Arminius knew their language and customs, and was also a Roman soldier, it was felt that he could serve as the perfect go-between. However, Arminius wasn't just serving as a Roman representative. While he was visiting the various tribes, he was actually creating an alliance. All the while he was doing that, he became one of Varus's top advisors on German affairs. He was earning the trust of Varus while he was organizing all the Germanic tribes to work together to fight Rome. He was working on a plan which would once and for all get the Romans out of Germany. On September of the year 9, Varus was going to be moving his legions from their summer headquarters to their winter camp near the Rhine River. In the middle of the march to their winter camp, Arminius came to Varus with news of an emergency that required his attention. He said that there was a rebellion amongst the German tribes. Varus decided to reroute all 3 of his legions to get to the rebellious area as soon as possible. That route took him and his 3 legions through an area that the Romans weren't familiar with, a place called the Teutoburg Forest. One of the leaders of the Cherusi, a man by the name of Segestes, warned Varus about Arminius's plan before they set out, and suggested that he arrest Arminius and all the other tribal chiefs. However, Varus simply didn't believe that such a thing was possible, so he ignored the advice of Segestes. Arminius, from his training, knew that Romans were not equipped to fight in wooded terrain. A Roman legion was designed to fight as a unit in open spaces where they could maneuver and fight as a cohesive unit. It was standard Roman tactics not to fight in forests. Inside the forest, the Germans were waiting for them, ready to spring their trap. The Romans were not marching in formation, and they were interspersed with camp followers who would usually walk behind the soldiers. Varus had also not sent any reconnaissance ahead, so they had no clue what they were walking into. The path was narrow and muddy, so the Romans couldn't organize to fight as a unit even if they wanted to. And on top of all that, it was raining. The Germans were still outnumbered, but they had the element of surprise, and were able to mass their forces to pick off the Romans who were stretched out along the trail. The battle lasted for 3 days, and the Germans had the high ground for almost all of the fight. The Germans had also built fortifications at key points along the route where they knew the Romans might be able to reassemble to mount a counterattack. Even when some Roman units were able to escape, most of them were cut down by other German tribes waiting outside the forest. On the 3rd day, Publius Quintilius Varus killed himself, taking the honorable Roman death in defeat. When word spread amongst the remaining Romans, morale collapsed. Those that weren't killed in battle were sacrificed in German pagan ceremonies or were enslaved. The end result was the complete annihilation of 3 Roman legions, the entirety of Rome's military presence in Germany. Estimates place the number of Roman deaths between 15,000 to 20,000. It was the equivalent of 10% of the entire Roman military. After the battle, the Germans went on a rampage, destroying every vestige of Rome that they could find, including all of the forts and cities. The Romans that were left all fled to a position across the Rhine River. The news hit Rome like a ton of bricks. Rome hadn't suffered a defeat of this magnitude in over 200 years. All of the fighting over the last several decades to establish a presence in Germany had been completely undone in 3 days. Augustus himself was haunted by the loss of his legions for the rest of his life. The historian Suetonius reported that Augustus walked around his palace hitting his head against the wall shouting, "Quintilius Varus, give me back my legions!" The 17th, 18th, and 19th legions were never reconstituted again in Roman history because of the shame brought from their defeat. After Augustus died just a few years later, the new emperor Tiberius sent his nephew Germanicus back to exact revenge. He did manage to secure several major victories and actually recovered 2 of the 3 lost eagle standards from the legions. 6 years after the battle, when the first Romans returned to the site, they found a horror show of bones and barbarian altars where the survivors were killed. Heads were nailed to trees. Germanicus ordered all of the Roman remains to be buried. However, once the Roman got their eagles back and felt honor had been satisfied, they withdrew to the Rhine. It wasn't seen as being worth the cost to try to conquer Germany anymore. The third eagle, by the way, was recovered 30 years later during the reign of the Emperor Claudius. The Romans put the blame for the defeat squarely on the shoulders of Varus. Arminius, despite his betrayal, was actually thought of highly by the Romans. He was respected as an enemy who managed to defeat 3 legions and fought for his people. Eventually, the Romans just accepted the Rhine and Danube rivers as the limits of their empire, at least to the north. They built a series of defensive fortifications called limes, which served as their border with Germany. This isn't to say that the Romans never crossed into Germany or didn't raise the idea of trying to conquer it again, but it was never seriously attempted as it was during the reign of Augustus. This border resulted in a very hard boundary between the Roman world and the Germanic world, a division that can still be seen in the language boundary in Europe today. There is a line that runs through Belgium, France, Germany, Switzerland, and Italy, where you predominantly see speakers of Germanic languages such as Dutch or German on one side, and speakers of Romance languages on the other. After 2,000 years of history, this line has obviously moved as countries and kingdoms rose and fell, but in general, that division still exists. Arminius became a symbol of German nationalism starting in the 16th century with Martin Luther, who saw Arminius's fight against the Romans as similar to his fight against Roman Catholicism. Arminius rose to further prominence during German unification in the 19th century, and of course it became a big symbol under Nazi rule as well. Despite the importance of the battle, over time the exact location of the Teutoburg Forest was lost to history. After 2 millennia, forests can come and go, and eventually nobody was sure exactly where the battle took place. The site was finally rediscovered in 1987 by a British amateur archaeologist with a metal detector who was searching for coins on his day off while stationed in Germany in the military. He found coins dating back no later than the reign of Augustus. A team of professional archaeologists began searching that year. What they found was an amazing collection of Roman items along a corridor that was 24 kilometers long and 1.6 kilometers wide. Today, the site can be found near the village of Kalkriese in the state of Lower Saxony, and there's a museum with artifacts found at the dig site. The Battle of Teutoburg Forest was one of the most important battles in European history. Its impact shaped not only the ancient map of Europe, but its echoes can still be seen in the modern world as well. The executive producer of Everything Everywhere Daily is Charles Daniel. The associate producers are Benji Long and Cameron Kiever. I want to give a big shout out to everyone who supports the show over on Patreon, including the show's producers. Your support helps me put out a show every single day. And also, Patreon is currently the only place where Everything Everywhere Daily merchandise is available to the top tier of supporters. If you'd like to talk to other listeners of the show and members of the Completionist Club, you can join the Everything Everywhere Daily Facebook group or Discord server. Links to everything are in the show notes.